throws it down. Caught by Boston College. I don't believe it. Oh. It's a touchdown.
20, 10.
He's got it.
End zone. Touchdown, Titans. It's a miracle.
Brandon, a three-pointer out front. The natural buries a 30-footer. At the buzzer, and the Blazers, a winner by two.
From basketball to hockey, football to the Olympics, this is a look at the day's best from the world of sports.
Griffey swings right away, and the Mariners have tied it in the ninth.
At half court, Michael Jordan beats the buzzer from half court.
And now, from the KBPS studios at Benson High School, this is Sports Ticker with your hosts, Sam Tung and Sean Phillipson.
You just go out there and play. That's been the case for last couple months, actually, last few months. Whole idea is to go out there and play. I'm trying to win a golf tournament just like everybody else here. And I'm getting everything I have.
Hello, sports fans. Welcome in to Sports Ticker with Sam Tung and Sean Phillipson on AM 1450 KBPS in Portland. We are broadcasting from the KBPS studios at Benson High School. Once again, quite a bit in store today.
Yes.
To run down everything that we've got, we're breaking down the top 10 Blazers of all time today, numbers 4 and 3 on the list. A couple good ones, obviously, and then tomorrow, numbers 2 and number 1. Also, get to your mailbags. We have a Major League Baseball mailbag section. You can send those emails in to sportsticker1450@gmail.com. We also continue our chat with Ben Golliver, part two of the interview with him. Ben Golliver, the reporter for BlazersEdge.com, the best website, I think we can both agree.
Yes.
Anything Trailblazers related. Check him out, BlazersEdge.com. A lot of great stuff there. We're talking Trailblazers in the next segment. And then we have our quirky sports story of the day, which is a good one this time.
Yeah.
It's pretty funny. And then we are going to wrap up the show. But first, our first segment today, thought we'd talk a little bit of PGA Tour golf here. PGA Championship this weekend. They teed off earlier this morning. And I think the biggest topic of the day, Sean, Mr. Tiger Woods.
Yet again, he's in a tournament again, and he's been on a slump lately, including that Invitational last week. And he really can't surprise anybody after his troubles golfing and stuff. I kind of look for maybe if Tiger Woods does not shape up real soon, somebody might take Tiger's real crown number one in golf, real in the Royal today. And he has not won any tournament yet, which really hurt his chances of winning a lot of games.
Yeah, well, Phil Mickelson right now, if he finishes, I can't remember, there's some mathematical formula to it, but basically, if Phil finishes at a really high top five spot and Tiger just totally bombs it again, Phil can overtake Tiger at the number one position. But, Sean, I think the real question here is, should Tiger Woods even be the favorite in this tournament? I think a lot of people are considering him as maybe, you know, the 20th, 30th best player in this tournament right now. And that's a lot, considering this is a guy that last year, maybe even 18 months ago, people thought that this guy was going to break the record for most major championships won and most tournaments won. It's a pretty big drop-off, so can we consider him the favorite coming into this?
Not quite a favorite again. We know a situation from last year. He cannot quite get his head in the game. I don't know if he's lost. I don't know if he's lost confidence in himself. Only Tiger knows that for himself. Only time will tell until Tiger Woods will be out of luck winning games. He might win one or two, hopefully, this year. But he's got to keep a rhythm, consistency each game, and during 18 holes. He's got to stay out of the bogey area, more birdies to be done, and some pars to keep his score pretty low. But his last week, again, in that Bridgestone Invitational, not good, as he went for a high score that day. His score's been so high, not there for him. And it seems like the first 8 or 9 holes are right there in Tiger's area, in his ballpark, really, to score. But the rest is history after that, because there are a lot of bogeys, a lot of pars. There's just no effort for him to get going. No luck for him to be a favorite.
Yeah, he's shot 7 straight rounds of golf that's been over par.
Yeah.
And you're going to tell me that he's the favorite for this tournament? I don't think so. And even I actually, before we came on air, I posed the question to Sean, even if he's leading after the first round, should he still be the favorite? And I think we both agree. Well, actually, you said no, correct?
No.
And I was thinking, I just said yes because I think that that finally will provide a little bit of confidence within himself to know that he's at the top of the leaderboard. Maybe he figured something out. But really, I'm not all that confident about that answer either. And this is, I mean, it's an incredible drop-off that Tiger Woods has had. The other issue now, Sean, is that there is a decision to be made on behalf of Team USA whether or not Tiger Woods should even be a member of the Ryder Cup team.
Yeah.
Yes, Colin Montgomery, the captain of the European team, he says, well, he's the best player in the world, and at least he's ranked number one in the world. He's won a whole slew of championships, PGA championships, and he's certainly one of the greatest golfers of all time, if not the greatest golfer of all time. Colin Montgomery said, no doubt this guy would make my Ryder Cup team, but he also said, I'm not the one making the decision.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's kind of a scare tactic to say the U.S. might say, oh, shoot, well, maybe Montgomery really thinks that, and then they end up putting Tiger on the team, but he really said that just to get him on the team because he knows he's going to, you know, flop later on. But in any case, Tiger Woods, Sean, should he even be making the Ryder Cup team? Because right now, I mean, last week at the Bridgestone, he finished 78th out of 80 people.
Yeah.
He shot he was 30 strokes behind the winner in that tournament. There's no way that this guy should be able to make the Ryder Cup team, but nonetheless, he's still the number one golfer in the world. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, going back to the question, should Tiger even play in the Ryder Cup? No. I don't think he needs to. We already talked about it here. We know he struggles in tournaments. He's yet to win a game this year, unlike every year, which he is so successful of doing. He has had no luck in games to win. Remember the worst game last week as a professional? Yes, we all know that. He might cost his team the game, and the blame might be going. The criticism might be going to him of not scoring low. Maybe not worth the time to win here. Has not won a tournament yet. I think he'll continue his little slump and fall to defeat again if he should play in the Ryder Cup, if the team would allow that to happen.
I think right now if Tiger finishes in the top 10, he makes the Ryder Cup. Anything outside the top 10, they aren't going to take him.
Yeah.
He's in a different world right now. And really, I think we talked about it earlier this week, rather. I think I brought up the point that Tiger, I've heard more comments about his kids than his golf in the last couple weeks. And the way I see it, the Tiger Woods that was dominating in the world of golf, you never heard about his family. All you heard about was, I was out there practicing, I was out there playing, I was out there testing the course, I was out there with my swing coach, I was making sure that I was the best golfer. He was an elite golfer, better than anyone has ever seen, and he was still making sure that he was getting better every day. That's how committed this guy was. And now we're hearing quotes of, well, you know, I've had to spend more time, or I'm spending more time with my kids, and that's what's really important. And I think that is what is more important. But at the same time, if Tiger Woods wants to earn any respect back from the golfing community or the sports community, he has to win on the course.
Yeah, no question about it.
And if he wants to win on the course, he's going to have to get out there. He has to get a swing coach. He has to, even if it means rehiring the old swing coach, I don't care. He just needs a swing coach, someone to keep him accountable out there. And he needs to get on the golf course. He has to focus 100% of his energy on golf if he wants any chance at coming back to this. Because the only way if he even has a sliver of thought about what's been going on in the last couple months, there is no way that he is going to be the same Tiger Woods. All of his energy has to be focused on his golf game if he wants to come back. That's what I believe at this point.
I think, again, with the family thing, I know Tiger has a family, and I know he wants to, you know, get going with that. But his focus is, before this even happened, he really had the passion for golf. That's all he really wanted to do, win a lot of titles, win a lot of championships and all that stuff. But again, Tiger has to win games to be successful and to get the respect for everybody in the league and the media back, too, just so he could be that number one golfer, which we all know him so well at doing a lot. That's all we really want to see.
Yeah, and that is going to do it for our Tiger Woods talk today. Coming up on the other side, once again, an interview, part two of the interview with Ben Golliver, one of the reporters for BlazersEdge.com, the best website for anything Trails Blazers related. If you haven't checked it out yet, please do so. BlazersEdge.com. Ben Golliver on the other side. This is Sports Ticker with Sam and Sean. The most sports at the 3 o'clock hour on AM 1450 KBPS.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
I was off-roading in the backcountry.
Oh, not surprising. You've got your home. Bears have theirs.
Yeah, but see, this wasn't just any bear. This bear was wearing jeans and a hat, as in a Smokey Bear.
Jeans and a hat. That's definitely Smokey. What exactly did he have to say?
Well, I was about to start up my ATV on a trail near a bunch of dry brush.
Oh, I can guess where this is going.
Right, right. Smokey told me that was dangerous because ATVs give off sparks, and one spark can start a wildfire.
That's true. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
Wow, no kidding?
I'm a forest ranger. We never kid.
Sorry.
that was a joke.
Oh.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
McGruff the Crime Dog here with my nephew Scruff. Here's the address for my new free comic activity book.
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652. Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
It shows kids what to do about guns and drugs and bullies and strangers. And it's got games and puzzles, too. Write it down now.
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois, 60652.
A public service message from this station, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition, and the Ad Council.
We're back with Sports Ticker on AM 1450 KBPS in Portland. I am Sam Tung, along with my partner Sean Phillipson. We're now going to play part two of an interview now with Ben Golliver, one of the reporters for BlazersEdge.com, the best website, in my opinion, and I think in Sean's opinion, too, of anything Trailblazer-related. We're going to get to part two of the interview now when we begin it by talking to Mr. Golliver about the new assistant GMs in Portland and the announcement of those two so they can help Rich Cho bring a championship to Portland. Do you think that it's going to take the announcement of these two assistant GMs before a major move is made, or do you even see another major move in the offseason, or are we just kind of waiting for maybe the trade deadline?
I mean, I think it really depends on, you know, what's your definition of major. You know, I think in Portland, almost any trade becomes a major trade, right?
Because
people
true.
Get so excited about it. You know, I think that their main core pieces, I don't see them really going anywhere even by the deadline. You know, I think the biggest possible piece that could get moved would be a guy like Andre Miller. You know, if they're able to find a point guard who maybe has a different skill set, who is in a situation right now where it's not working out perfectly, maybe that team is convinced that Andre would be a better fit, then maybe I could see that piece getting moved. You know, they obviously have a big trade chip in the form of Joel Prisbilla's contract. You know, the initial reports now already are that, you know, Prisbilla could be ready by opening night. Now, that's a very optimistic diagnosis that's coming from him, and that's, you know, kind of an aggressive target date. But nevertheless, that's going to let Prisbilla show people before the trade deadline whether he can still play or not, or whether he's just trading for his contract. And I think that's probably going to wind up pushing any trade of him back to the deadline. And then, you know, obviously the other piece is going to be Rudy Fernandez. He's not happy here. Doesn't have much of a you know, playing time role. So I think those are the pieces, you know, that you're the major pieces or the bigger names that you're looking at potentially being able to move. But, you know, I don't think it's really going to depend too much on when he names his assistant GMs, because I think he's going through a full review process of sort of, you know, all the personnel, how they fit, and, you know, how it might work going forward. He's obviously got to consult with the coaching staff, and some of the new coaching staff members have to get up to speed working with the players. So, you know, I don't think they're in a huge rush to make a move. I think right now, if you look at the Blazers on paper, I mean, they've got so many players that at this point they're going to have to leave, you know, a guy like Armin Johnson or a guy like Elliot Williams, who are sort of highly touted draft picks. Those guys are not even going to be able to be activated on the opening night roster. I mean, they're going to be in street clothes because they don't have enough spots on the roster for them. So when you have that deep of a team, you're always going to have the mentality of, like, you know, we don't want to mess with a good thing. It's better to have flexibility. It's better to have that depth. And so I don't see a huge move coming this offseason. If there is one, it's probably going to be Rudy. I think if they can get a first-round pick for Rudy, they dump him. Mm-hmm. And I think they're just kind of waiting for somebody to bite on that. you know, around the league, you know, Rudy's reputation is, you know, not great right now. And, you know, he can do some things. You know, he obviously has some liabilities as a player too, but, you know, you don't ever want to sell low on a guy like Rudy Fernandez. You want to be able to get good value for him. And, you know, he can make as much noise as he wants in the Spanish press or wherever about how unhappy he is. I mean, personally, if I was the Blazers, my approach would be to play hardball with Rudy, bring him into camp, you know, treat him like any other player because, you know, he's only your ninth or tenth best player, and you don't want that kind of a person running your personnel decisions, right? I mean,
right,
he should
just
stay in line, know his role, and, you know, play hardball with him. And if a trade comes up, if he's able to show some nice things during the fall that get people interested, maybe you can move him for good value at the trade deadline with a guy like Joel Prisbilla, and all of a sudden you've got one more playoff piece going forward. But the thing about Rudy is, you know, he's in a worse position than he was last year because I like Wesley Matthews, and I think Nate's going to like Wesley Matthews even more than he liked Martell Webster. And I think, you know, Rudy's at a, you know, a spot potentially where he's going to see even less time than he did last year, and he wasn't happy with his minutes last year. So, you know, the number one person who wants to see Rudy Fernandez traded is Rudy Fernandez. I don't think there's any question about that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm not sure I see a fit. I mean, do you guys see a fit or a team that really wants him and needs him? I mean, he can't start for you. He's
right.
Not a starting
exactly.
Guard in the NBA. So, you know, where is he going?
Well, the question, too, is, you know, in Portland, and it's been reported heavily, too, that Portland, especially fans here, we overvalue the players. And so did the coaching staff last year. That was kind of one of the knocks on him. Front office management, not the coaching staff. But still, if front office management is saying, this guy has no value, you probably know then that his value is basically nothing when you look league-wide. So, you know, it's definitely kind of a situation where he isn't going to start really anywhere. I could see him even starting for maybe like the Knicks or the Nets or something that's they're so shallow in terms of talent that I could see something like that. But one other quick question for you, Ben. ESPN put Portland number 5 in the West, 49 games. That's what they predicted. Do you think that that's a fair assessment of the team? Because it seems like right now, if the team's healthy, they could be even a top 3 team in the West.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it all comes down to health, especially with the Blazers. And, you know, that really boils down to Oden. You know, I've been saying, you know, over the last couple of weeks, I see this as a top 4 or top 5 team in the West, you know, almost regardless of health. I mean, I just think, you know, like we talked about with the depth, with the talent that's in place, with a healthy, completely healthy Brandon Roy coming back, with the rest of LaMarcus Aldridge coming back, and also, you know, with such a great home court advantage here in Portland. I mean, that really all adds up to, you know, pretty big win totals when you're talking about the regular season. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see them in a top five spot. You know, I think the one team in that ESPN thing you're talking about, I thought the Utah Jazz were really undervalued.
Yeah,
I think that's
going to
be a
absolutely
top 2 or 3 team. I think people are buying a little too much stock in Oklahoma City at this point. You know, I'm a huge Kevin Durant fan, one of the biggest Kevin Durant fans in the world. You know, I like what Westbrook can do, but I'm not sure that they made the move this summer that's going to put them over the top. And I think, you know, they didn't have a ton of adversity in terms of injuries, and you know, it was still kind of a fresh new thing. You know, they weren't really grinding last year. I mean, it was all about, you know, reaching their expectations for the first time. I think that comes with a certain motivation in the NBA. I mean, this is the prove-it year for them, and, you know, we'll see how they respond to that. I wouldn't be surprised to see them take a slight step back, actually, from last year.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look at a team like, I mean, you always got to consider Denver. You know, I think they're always going to be in the mix just based on the pieces they have. You know, obviously Los Angeles is going to be the number one team. But I think, you know, those are the 5 teams that I see as being probably the top 5. You know, I'm not real huge on Dallas, not real huge on San Antonio, not real huge on Phoenix just because of the age issues in all those places. You know, of those 3, I probably like Dallas the most. But, you know, I would think that Portland would be able to give Dallas a run. Or at least I would hope so, you know, given their respective rosters at this point. So I'd say, you know, 50 wins I think should be the goal this year. But, you know, more than that, I think they're really focusing on the second round of the playoffs. That seems to be the, you know, the driving factor behind everything they're doing right now. I think if they get in, they'll be happy. And from there, it's just about taking the next step. So
do you think that
I'd say, you know, ESPN maybe was a little bit conservative, but, you know, 49, 50, 51, 52, it doesn't matter a ton. I think they prefer to have the home court advantage, obviously. You know, getting to that 4th seed would be huge. But, you know, I like how Portland matches up with just about everybody, even the Lakers.
Yeah.
I like the different options they can throw out. I like the length. I like the athleticism. I like some of the youth, but also some of the experience. I mean, it's going to be a fun year, I think, for Blazers fans. Hopefully they avoid some of the drama from last year with all the injuries and it becomes, you know, back to the fun it was 2 years ago where everyone was with seeing rings in their future, right?
Yeah. Ben Golliver, BlazersEdge.com, joining us. Any new stories on the horizon? I saw Dave's coming back. Is it tomorrow, or is he already back?
No, he's back finally.
Okay.
Missed him.
you've been carrying the load. He was gone for like a week, wasn't he?
Yeah, well, you know, he deserves a vacation. He deserves a month-long vacation for all the work he's been doing over the last couple of years, and even probably longer than that. But, you know, he's been a premier analytical voice in the Blazers blogosphere for as long as anybody can remember.
Well, you two do a fantastic job. As I said at the beginning, it's really and truly, the first stop that I make, I go to a couple of the major sports sites, but then Blazers Edge always in the top two or three sites that I go to. If you're listening to the show and you haven't been to BlazersEdge.com, this is the place to go for Blazers talk. Ben Golliver joining us graciously, spending some time with us on the program. Okay, last question. If Greg Oden is healthy, is he an all-star? I'm very curious as to your take on this.
I think he's got all-star potential, and he had it last year. I mean, there was already parts where he's flashing that. The thing with Greg, though, a lot of it, the all-star voting really comes down to being, you know, based on rep, right? Based on your reputation.
Yeah.
At this point, and like I hate to say this for Greg, like he has no national profile at all. You know, I mean, in some cases, he's kind of seen as a laughing stock around the league.
Well, yeah, especially because of how Kevin Durant's been playing.
Yeah, you know, he gets those comparisons exactly right. But, you know, even more so than that, you know, it's just the whole storyline of the Sam Bowie thing catches up to him around the league. And the fact that he's been out so much, you know, people have seen so little of him. You know, we have seen every single one of those 82 regular season games that he's played in Portland. But if you go around the league and you ask people how many games have you actually seen Greg Oden play, I know diehard NBA fans, even people who cover the league professionally, who could say they've only seen Greg play maybe 10, 15 times max. You know, just because he's, you know, we're on the West Coast, they don't see him back there. That's not, you know, I mean, you can almost put up any numbers you want to put up, and if you have that little of recognition, you know, you're not going to be in contention for the All-Star voting. And because, you know, fans end up, you know, following that same thing. So, you know, he would have to have a spectacular season, you know, above and beyond anything we've seen to be an All-Star this year. Is that out of the question? No, I don't think it is. But I also think, you know, part of it's going to come down to how does Nate manage his minutes? How does Nate manage his role? Does he start from day one? You've got a lot of centers in place. Do you want to just take the conservative approach, get some early season wins, and start with Marcus Camby? You know, they actually just released the schedule right before we started talking, maybe half an hour before we started talking. You know, a lot of road trips early in the season. Does that mean you go to the veteran Camby to start early? Maybe, you know, bring Greg a little, you know, along a little slower. I mean, you don't really want Greg to burn out and put up huge all-star numbers in the fall. You want Greg in place for the playoff series when you need his three block shots and 15 rebounds to secure the victory, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't think there's going to be really, you know, I don't think he's going to be a huge priority, you know, when it comes to getting touches on offense, which helps a lot on the all-star voting. I don't think, you know, he's probably going to play as many minutes as it would take to become an all-star this season. But, you know, you never know. I try to stay as grounded as I can when it comes to Oden because I really, really want him to succeed, as I think a lot of people do. But, you know, I don't think we need to be throwing that all-star hype onto him at this point. It's a little bit early for that. But, again, it's not out of the question. I mean, his per-minute numbers, I'm sure you know this, you know, his per-minute numbers are just insane.
Yeah.
I mean, the number of rebounds he gets per possession is just, I mean, is astronomical. He just does things that a lot of other people don't do by virtue of his size and his quickness. So, you know, it's not out of the question, but I'd say ease up on the expectations for him and just hope that he gets through training camp healthy and he's on the court for that first game. That's what I'm hoping for.
You ready for that Miami game?
Oh, yeah, that'll be crazy. Well, you know, it'll be really interesting to see how they get treated here in Portland because, you know, it's always the most dramatic game in the Rose Garden is always that Lakers game.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, it's like the Dallas game where the refs totally, you know, freak out and everybody's going nuts throwing stuff on the court. But it's always that Lakers game is the one that everybody has circled. And you kind of wonder, you know, how is Miami going to get treated here? I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure. Are there going to be Miami Heat jerseys in the crowd? Is there going to be people wearing LeBron James shirts? I don't know. It'll be interesting.
Well, it'll certainly be a storyline to watch. Ben Golliver joining us on Sports Ticker with Sam Tung, Sean Phillipson. Ben, thank you so much for joining us, and get ready for training camp. It's coming up pretty soon. We're ready for more Blazer coverage. Ben Golliver, probably the best cover of the Portland Trail Blazers. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure, man. Take care.
That was Ben Golliver joining us on Sports Ticker with Sam Tung and Sean Phillipson. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with more sports action. This is the voice of the Portland Public Schools, AM 1450 KBPS in Portland.
I'm Peyton Manning. On the football field, I always had to prepare for the unexpected. My teammates and I train to think fast and be ready ahead of the game. You can be ready with the help of your local American Red Cross. The American Red Cross can help all of us prepare for life's emergencies. Take life-saving CPR or first aid courses. Make an emergency plan or learn how to build a disaster supplies kit. Contact the American Red Cross today.
Call 1-800-HELP-NOW or visit redcross.org to learn more.
Sports Ticker continues on AM 1450 KBPS. Now back to Sam and Sean.
Welcome back to Sports Ticker on AM 1450 KBPS in Portland. I'm Sean Phillips along with Sam Tung, and we are covering our top 10 Blazers of all time. We covered Rasheed Wallace and Cliff Robinson Monday, Buck Williams and Jerome Kersey Tuesday, Maurice Lucas and Brandon Roy yesterday, and today we're going to cover our 4 and 3 top Blazer picks. And in case you missed yesterday's show or any of our past shows this week of our top 10 Blazers, you can go to www.kbps.am. There will be a archive page to the right-hand side of the screen with all the downloads that you can listen to on the archive section. And if you're listening to in a car or anything really, you can go to 1450 KBPS. Or if you're near your computer or if you're out of a car, you can go to kbps.am and listen live on the Listen Live page on the bottom left of the page. All right, Sam. Number 4, Geoff Petrie.
Considered the original Trailblazer.
Yes.
He was the first player drafted by the team after they expanded into the NBA. And really, I guess the big thing about Geoff Petrie is just the fact that he was the first superstar with the team. He played 6 seasons in Portland. And in fact, a very injury-prone guy and a guy that faced a ton of injuries throughout his career. After those 6 seasons in Portland, he had problems with his contract, and the Trailblazers ended up trading him away. And after that was the last time he ever saw the basketball court. Only played in 6 seasons in his entire NBA career. So you can say he was a lifetime Blazer, though not the way that Petrie wanted to go out. One of the most fantastic players in the league at that point. He had won the co-NBA Rookie of the Year. In what year was that? 1971. Thank you very much. He averaged over 21 points a game with the Blazers and nearly 5 assists a game. He's 6th in scoring all time on the team, 5th in assists. And as pointed out by Jason Quick, beat writer for the Portland Trail Blazers, he did a top 40 Blazers list of all time. And he made a great point in pointing out that Geoff Petrie played in an era of basketball where there was no 3-point line. So
right.
This is a guy that could really fill it up. He had 2 50-point games in a span of a couple months. Really a star in the NBA, and it's really unfortunate that his career had to end the way it did. But nonetheless, Sean, one of the best players in Trailblazer history.
No doubt. One of the most prolific scorers in the team, too. As you point out, co-rookie of the year with Boston's Dave Cullens back in 71, is number 45 jersey, retired with the Blazers in 81. Was the franchise single-game scoring mark of 51 for 22 years. He did it twice in a 3-month span in 73. This is the statistics of how he did it. The first game against the Rockets, both of them were really against the Rockets. In the first 51-point game, he had 19 of 35 shooting, 13 of 14 from the free throw line, and 7 assists in 42 minutes.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and in the second game, same amount of made shots, 19, but he cut it down to 28, 19 of 28 from the field, 13 of 16 at the free throw line, and 5 assists in 40 minutes. So if he was in our present time playing in the NBA, really, get the fantasy owners going, because he is that good of a player to eat up points on the board.
Yeah, and not only, and I think it goes now just beyond basketball, Geoff Petrie also an incredibly strong relationship with the Portland Trailblazers. He, as I said, the 6 seasons in the NBA, he never actually won a championship. Year that they won the championship, before the year started, they ended up trading away Petrie, and that was a trade that brought in Maurice Lucas, who we covered him yesterday, I think it was.
Yeah.
So Maurice Lucas also in the top 5 or 6 Blazers of all time. So, but he came back as a general manager in the 80s and 90s. He built the team along with Rick Adelman that brought the team to a couple championships in 1990 and 1992. They made it to the championship round. They also made it to the Western Conference Finals in between those two championship runs. So Jeff Petrie, I think, and we've seen this in large part, Sean, across the board with all of these guys. When you talk about Jerome Kersey, we're going to talk about Terry Porter in a second. Not as much Bill Walton and Clyde Drexler anymore. Those two Hall of Famers in their own right and two of the greatest basketball players of all time. But now we're seeing the same with Buck Williams now coming on as an assistant coach for the Portland Trail Blazers. A lot of these guys, they've just been longtime Blazers. I think there's an aura of Blazer basketball that these people, they're just very comfortable in Portland. They love the city. They love the way that the fans rally behind the team. And Jeff Petrie was a similar case. He's been the GM in Sacramento for the last 16 years and actually won the Executive of the Year Award in Sacramento twice in the 98-99 year and the 2000-2001 year. So one of the most fantastic executives that the NBA has to offer. He's done a nice job building the team now. And we're talking about a guy that really did two things for the Blazers. He did it for him on the court, and he's done it for him off the court, too, in bringing two championship runs. They didn't win the championship, but they certainly made it to the NBA Finals in the early 90s. And I think that we've seen a lot of these top 10 Blazers, Sean. These are guys that are long-time Blazers. They're going to be lifetime Blazers. They're ambassadors of Blazer basketball, and there are people that are recognizable faces in the community. They're going out in the community and really saying, we want to improve everyone's lives. We want to improve everyone's organization, and we want to do so in the name of Trailblazer basketball. And I think that that's one thing that Jeff Petrie really, really embodied within his career in Portland.
No doubt about it. He even holds the team record for points, which is still there by a rookie with 46 points. Great numbers for him. All right, we move on to number three, Terry Porter. Mr. King of all three-pointers. He really did it all for the team for 10 years from 85 to 95. Here's some statistics: 15 points per game, 7 assists a game, and around 3.5 boards a game. This is a man who's franchise leader in assists at 5,319 and in three-pointers with 773, 56 more than Damon Stoudemire.
And he's also second in franchise history in scoring and in steals. So this Terry Porter, and remember, I think most importantly for Terry Porter, he was a guy that was not only scoring the basketball, as you said, from the three-point line. That's, you know, when you're talking about second in franchise history and points, he put in a lot of threes. I think that that's they were talking, an interviewer was talking to Porter and saying, or he was saying how Clyde would just cut through the middle and then find, you know, Terry wide open for three on so many occasions. But in large part, that's the reason why he is so high in scoring, was because of the three-point basket. But A, he could do it on defense, second in franchise history in steals, but also the team, he was leading the team and kind of driving this train that made it to two championship rounds. And Terry Porter was the perfect man for the job, a guy that's been an NBA head coach now a couple times. He is now an ambassador for Trailblazer basketball. He is a guy that, and imagine that your job is to try to figure out how to control an offense that includes Clyde Drexler, Jerome Kersey, Kevin Duckworth, Buck Williams, Clifford Robinson. I mean, that's a lot of talent that you have to distribute the ball to, and Terry Porter did it seamlessly. He was one of the best point guards really in the NBA in terms of that. I mean, you talk about just some of the point guards in the NBA right now, some of the more aged ones, but some of the more experienced ones, like a Derek Fisher that's won a couple championships in his career.
Yeah.
And just, you know, there's other, even Andre Miller falls into that category of a player that people bring in order to figure out a way to distribute the ball amongst so much talent. And I think that that's what really set Terry Porter apart, was he was a guy, he was never necessarily the face of the franchise. Clyde Drexler was always going to be that guy because he was the all-star. He was the all-NBA player. He's now the Hall of Famer. But I think without Terry Porter, that could have been a much different situation. We may have not seen a fast break that was as good as the one that Portland had with Jerome Kersey and Clyde Drexler on both sides, but it was Terry Porter controlling the basketball, controlling the tempo of the game. And that's really, I mean, that transitions to today perfectly. I mean, this is such a guard-driven league these days that if you have a point guard like Terry Porter, like Derek Fisher in the current times, kind of a more experienced guy, a guy that can shoot the basketball, but also a guy that is willing to not always be the first option, I think that that's exactly what Terry Porter did. And I think that, you know, that is a type of player that every team has looked for since the beginning. And that is certainly why Terry Porter is a number three overall trailblazer of all time.
No doubt. And remember, he led the elite in the Blazers team in assists for 5 years in a row. Team record 10.1 assists. His 19 assists in against Utah, second most in Blazer history. 7 triple doubles tied him with Signe Wicks for most in franchise history. Now this is the big line here. Holds the record for points in the quarter with 25 against Golden State in 92. Big game when he had 40 points, 25 of them in the fourth quarter, trying to rally in a comeback fashion. This was against the Warriors where they had great players in terms of with Tim Hardaway, Mitch Richmond, and Chris Mullin. Great three players, but really he really took over a game, and they won 131-116, outscored the Warriors 48-26 in the fourth. Porter in that fourth quarter, 6 of 8 in the fourth quarter. He had all 4 of his three-point attempts, 7 of 8 from the free throw line. He really did damage all over the floor.
Yeah, and I just love how he averaged over 10 assists in a season, the 87-88 season. And probably the most important award to Terry Porter, to be perfectly honest, is probably the award for the Citizenship Award, the Walter J. Kennedy Award that he won after the 92-93 season. I could see Terry Porter having that be one of his biggest accomplishments in his NBA career. Now, as I said, an ambassador for Trailblazer basketball. The Blazers lucked out in the guys that are ambassadors for the Trailblazers. I mean, really, what better people than Jerome Kersey or Terry Porter? I mean, these were guys that this city loved, and they embraced them. And these were guys that this city, I mean, when you think everyone I talked to, we obviously were very young in the days of Terry Porter and Jerome Kersey and the Clyde Drexler era of Trailblazer basketball. But still, when you hear people talk about those days, people just loved this team.
Right.
And I certainly think Terry Porter could have been the most lovable player on that team then. I don't mean that in a soft way. I just mean it as in seriously. People just really like Terry Porter, and I think that that is, you know, right now winning that Citizenship Award in the early 90s was probably very important to him, and him being an ambassador for Trailblazer basketball probably, I mean, I don't think the Blazers could ask for anything more.
And that will do it for our top 10 Blazers so far, 10 through 3. Tomorrow we'll cover numbers 2 and number 1, so brace yourselves, fans. We're getting closer to the end of our top 10 Blazers of all time. And remember, if you missed any of our episodes of this week, go to kbps.am for archive updates. And up next, it's our mailbag section. You could send in your emails to sportsticker1450@gmail.com. And if you send your email, most likely it will be answered. So again, on the other side, our mailbag section on Sports Ticker on AM 1450 KBPS.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you, the enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, that one.
The free-to-be-me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not-so-far-away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Are you ready? Hey, what's up, everyone? This is your girl, Fergie, asking you from the heart to donate blood at your local American Red Cross. Giving blood is easy. It only takes about an hour, and a single donation can help save up to 3 lives. You might help a friend, a classmate, or a neighbor. Make your appointment to give blood today by calling the American Red Cross at 1-800-GIVE-LIFE or by visiting givelife.org. The need is constant. The gratification is instant. Give blood.
You're listening to Sports Ticker on AM 1450 KBPS. Once again, here's Sam and Sean.
Welcome back to Sports Ticker on AM 1450 KBPS in Portland. Sean Phillips along with Sam Tung. And it is now time for our mailbag section.
It's here! Listen up! It's time for mail call!
DeMail! DeMail is here!
Ooh!
What's this? A letter for me!
Mail's in!
You got mail, baby!
And remember, you can send your emails in to SportsTicker, sportsticker1450@gmail.com. This is a Thursday edition of our mailbag. So, Sam, who do we got on today?
This email coming from Philip in Tigard. Philip writes in, all of our emails this week, Major League Baseball related.
Yes.
So Philip, taking that and running with it, sending us his email. He writes in, will A-Rod break the all-time home run record? What are your opinions on that, especially considering he admitted to performance-enhancing drugs? Sean.
Yes, this is ridiculous here. A-Rod breaking the home run record. Remember, Barry Bonds did it at 762. I think he'll be close. He's at 600 right now, but it's going to be close. He has 163 to go to break the record. He is 35 years old, but the problem is I think he'll start to slow down. He will still get, I think, as many home runs as he did in his prime. If he can stay fit, active, he would be very close to get it. I mean, when you look at the enhancing drugs, he admitted doing it, even though he didn't know he was doing it.
Well, that's what he says, at least. I think the real idea here is that he very well knew what he was doing. He just wanted to mask it as if he didn't know what he was doing. So you're right in bringing up that he said that he didn't know that it was actually performance-enhancing drugs, but I'm very skeptical that he didn't know that that was affecting his performance.
It really was, and not only that, I think he was suspended for a amount of games, and fans still think at that time that would the steroid era really would end. But really, Rodriguez, A-Rod, rather, he is like the savior for the Major League Baseball. And he did that, and people would look at him as like, why did you make this choice and chose the drugs over the game of baseball like that? You know, drugs, when they become a factor, it costs players a chance to go far, maybe like being in the Hall of Fame or break a lot of records without him, really. I mean, I know he didn't mean to do it, but one mistake like that could take a toll on a career like that.
Well, I am very convinced that he knew exactly what he was doing and that it wasn't just an oops, sorry mistake. It was I'm doing this, I'm going to hit a bunch of home runs doing it, and I'm going to save baseball, I'm going to save the home run record, or I want to break the home run record. And then people just thought, this was like pre-Mitchell report, I guess, that people thought, well, he apparently hasn't, you know, he's not connected to steroids. He's been fairly consistent with the number of home runs that he's hit. So the power numbers, unlike Barry Bonds, where he went from hitting, you know, 20 or 30 home runs to 50, 60, 70 home runs.
Right.
In a short, you know, couple seasons. Those are the major things that are different between A-Rod and Barry Bonds. But I think you're bringing up, it's a good point that, yeah, he was, people thought that he was going to be the one that would break the record and was clean and wasn't, you know, he didn't touch the performance enhancers, but he did touch them. Obviously, he admitted to it. And I think I'm still skeptical to say, oh, he didn't mean to. It was one little decision. I think it was a multitude of decisions that he made during his career in order to come to the just kind of convince yourself. And it's interesting, too. A lot of speakers say that the human mind is interesting in that we can almost convince ourselves of anything and rationalize anything. And I think that's probably what Alex Rodriguez did. He could rationalize over a period of time that taking these performance enhancers was okay and that he was doing the good thing for baseball and he was going to eventually break the home run record. And he called it, you know, in his mind, I'm sure he thought it was going to be considered clean. But obviously now he's understanding, well, that record isn't quite as clean as he would have liked initially. But he certainly, as you said, he's going to make a bid for the title. But to say that he has you know, he made one little mistake. I think that it's a bigger deal than that.
I think so, but it's kind of hard to forgive these people, these type of players who are considered the bad guy. But I know A-Rod, but for A-Rod, really, I know he didn't mean to do the, I know he was trying to do the right thing, but in terms of not doing the drugs, but whenever you do it, but it's just not there for him. And players will get suspended or maybe lose their job as a player if they continue to use drugs on a regular occasion basis. But for A-Rod's sake, he told the media that he wouldn't do it anymore. He knows his role in games to, you know, to get home runs, batter, and play defense and whatnot. But again, A-Rod didn't know nothing. I don't know if he didn't know anything about steroids as, when he got it down or until he did. But he is just too good of a player and too smart to do that. So, Sam, what are your points on the home run
thing?
Well,
I think there's a couple questions here.
Okay.
Philip asks, will he break the all-time home run record? And I think that he can. But my only question is, can his durability maintain throughout his entire career? He's 35 years old. He had his 35th birthday about a week before he hit number 600. The youngest player to ever do it, too. So the next youngest was Babe Ruth at about 36 years of age, and he did it in 183 fewer games, and so that came from the Associated Press. So he's hit 30-plus home runs in 13 of the last 14 seasons. So that I think that he can, through the age of 38 or so, 38, 39,
mm-hmm.
he can probably continue at that 30-plus home run pace. He's on pace again this year, and I really think that 700 is very doable for Alex Rodriguez. I think that that is the one number that I can almost guarantee that he will hit. The only problem is when he turns 40, 41, can he continue to hit, you know, multitude of home runs? He's going to have to hit 25, 30 home runs, you know, when he's 41, 42 years old if he wants to be able to break Barry Bonds' record at 762 right now. And in large part, a large reason that he probably hit a lot of those home runs is because he's just so talented, he's so good and so strong. But there is a piece of it that has to do with those performance enhancers. And the performance enhancers aren't just adding an extra bounce to your bat. They're also adding a certain amount of durability for a player. They're helping your muscles recover at a quicker rate. They're helping muscle mass be built quicker while you're working out in the off season. That's basically what steroids do. They're speeding up that process. So the odds of him being durable and not, you know, not breaking down when he's 40, 41 years old, especially when you consider the kind of wear and tear on these guys' bodies, they play a lot of games, especially Alex Rodriguez. He's more of a global icon now. He does a lot more outside of baseball than most of these players do.
Yeah.
He is, you know, he's the face of the New York, well, he's not the face of the New York Yankees, but he is one of the main faces of the New York Yankees. He's one of the main faces of Major League Baseball right now. Many would consider him still to be the best player in the game, although Albert Pujols is slowly taking that crown away from Alex Rodriguez and has almost solidified it, if not already has done
yeah.
so. So, but still, Alex Rodriguez, one of the best players in the game, probably the best third baseman in the game right now. He certainly can hit the baseball. But it's just, you know, if he can stay healthy throughout, you know, the next 5, 6, 7 years, which he really has to do, he can't hit 70 home runs, you know, in three seasons and break the record. That's not going to happen. We have to be a little more reasonable in thinking. And, you know, his numbers are going to decline at some point. He isn't going to be able to stay consistent for the rest of his life. So the question becomes, at what point does he start to taper off, and will it be too late for him to catch Bonds at 762.
Right.
And then the other part of the question from Philip, our opinions on breaking the home run record, especially considering he admitted to performance enhancers. It's super frustrating as a fan, and I think every fan can kind of relate to this. Every time we get close to a record, every time, you know, there's the Lance Armstrong stuff that's going on right now that's, you know, it's still a controversy, but he broke the record for the most Tour de France wins in a career at 7. And now we have Alex Rodriguez. He's chasing the record. Barry Bonds broke the record. But prior to that, just prior to that, we get the word from Jose Canseco and other Balco people and other people that Barry Bonds has been using performance-enhancing drugs in order to break the record. Now, Alex Rodriguez, he got awfully close. A lot of people thought that he would have an opportunity to break it, and he isn't going to be able to break it without the asterisk on his plaque. So we're getting to a point where it's almost like every record that is broken at this point, we just have to say, well, he probably did something to make it that way. And these are the kinds of people that are ruining it for everyone else. And we look at guys like Derek Jeter, even, that I would be very shocked if he took performance-enhancing drugs. Or even Ken Griffey Jr. Ken Griffey Jr., a member of the 600 home run club, at 630 home runs, he retired this year. He played in the steroid era. A lot of people don't believe that he did steroids, but because he played in the era, he played with players that had, like Alex Rodriguez, that have used them in the past. I mean, he was a teammate of Alex Rodriguez when he was playing in Seattle. So these are guys that were certainly surrounded by these illegal substances, and they were certainly, you know, they may or may not have used them, but just because they were close to them, they're associated with the era, you can't say whether or not they use them or not. So in that case, it's very frustrating to see Alex Rodriguez do something like this and start to chase records and then to have it all crash and burn towards the end. It's a very sad sight to see as a fan. I certainly don't think that it is a real record if he breaks the home run record. I think many fans, myself included, still think that Hank Aaron is the home run king. I think that he will probably always be the home run king. Albert Pujols may even make a run at it. We'll have to see how he does and how he fares later in his career. But as of right now, at 755, that home run record, I think, stands. I think when everyone thinks of the greatest home run hitter of all time, they don't think Alex Rodriguez, they don't think Barry Bonds, they think Henry Aaron, number one. And so in that sense, I think that, you know, it's basically ruins the legacy of Alex Rodriguez in terms of home run hitting. There's no way that his legacy will be ruined of how good he is. He's always going to be considered one of the greatest players to ever play baseball. But certainly when it comes to records, people are always going to be reminded by the fact that he was associated with performance-enhancing drugs. How many of those home runs did he hit were because of something outside of his control?
Thanks to Philip and Tiger for sending in his email about the home run record and a little bit of the A-Rod talk. You can also do the same to send your emails in. Don't hesitate to do that to sportsticker1450@gmail.com. And again, your answers will be answered on the show. Coming up next, our quirky sports story moment of the day. You don't want to miss that. This is Sports Ticker on AM 1450 KBPS.
Hi, I'm Ryan Seacrest for RAD. Over 300 people in this country are killed every week by a drunk driver. That's the equivalent of 2 747 plane crashes every single week. And the problem isn't going away unless we all do our part to stop it. So if you see someone who's about to drive after drinking, get the keys. Don't leave it up to anyone else. Friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Everything you need to know about the world of sports. This is Sports Ticker on AM 1450 KBPS.
Welcome back to Sports Ticker on AM 1450 KBPS in Portland. I'm Sean Phillips along with Sam Tung, and it is time for our quirky sports story moment of the day. And this one, where does it go to, Sam?
This one coming from the Hockey Hall of Fame, a very interesting story where a man by the name of Brendan Milhauser took a picture of the, what trophy was it? The Prince of Wales trophy, which is given every year to the champion from the Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
The NHL, kind of known for all of its trophies. They have the President's Trophy, which is the league's highest point total, are given to the regular season champion. Then there's also obviously the Stanley Cup for the winner of the
Stanley Cup
finals. So a lot of trophies in the NHL. But the problem was here that the Prince of Wales Trophy, a guy was at the Hall of Fame, and he was looking at this trophy, and they engrave all of the names of the teams in every year that they win. And so he looks at the trophy, and he sees that in the Eastern Conference Champion Trophy, the Prince of Wales Trophy, it is engraved that the Washington Capitals won the Eastern Conference.
Oh, come on.
The only problem is that the Philadelphia Flyers were at that time playing in Chicago in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Yeah.
So basically, the NHL makes a big boo-boo, and they put the wrong team on the trophy. And so he takes a picture of it with his phone, and there's all these... And now, all of a sudden, the NHL is saying, oh, that picture's photoshopped, it's a hoax, that's not real, this and that. But the only problem was the guy's picture was real, and then he started blogging about it and saying, they messed this up. And sure enough, they admitted the mistake, and what they're thinking, what the excuse from the NHL is right now is that, or not the excuse from the NHL, but what the likely excuse is that they were just trying to engrave everything really quickly, and then they mixed up the regular season champion with the Eastern Conference champion, because most people assume that the Capitals were going to make it to the Stanley Cup Finals, but they did not. So a major mix-up, but an interesting story nonetheless, that guy is just, you know, looking at this trophy. He's at the Hall of Fame, and he says, wait a second. That's not
right.
That isn't that engraving is wrong, but they have changed it and everything's okay.
Yeah, you really hate to see that happen, especially if you're the champion and stuff. You know, you got to have it correct. I know it was a hurried process, but could it be done a little bit sooner, quicker, or time frame or constraint or whatnot? I don't know. Didn't say, but nevertheless, a little bit of a change up with the champions here.
Yeah, and the guy Brendan Milhauser, one of his quotes when he was really confused. He was quoted as saying, I was getting frustrated as a fan, but I'm a cynical guy myself. I had my family look at the pictures for me saying, can you guys tell me I'm not crazy? But it's not like I thought someone put the Capitals on there on purpose.
Ugh.
So it's not like he was just, you know, out to get someone. He just was saying, you guys messed this up. And it took a little while for the story to get a little momentum, and then it got on Comcast Philadelphia.
Comcast Sportsnet Philadelphia. Yeah,
so it they were saying that there on there it was a hoax, but then they realized that it was true, and then it finally got a little bit of national momentum. So
yeah.
But nonetheless, thank you, Brendan Milhauser.
You made the cut.
Yeah, a good eye there, and that is our quirky sports story of the day. We want to thank you all for sending us an email, if you did so.
Yeah.
If you haven't yet, please do so, sportsticker1450@gmail.com. Also find us on Twitter at sportstick1450 or on Facebook. Become a fan of the page. Send us a message there. Sportsticker on AM1450 KBPS is where you will find us there. Also, once again, thanks to Ben Golliver, reporter for Blazers Edge, joining us on the program. Spent quite a bit of time with us as we got two parts of the interview from him. If you missed either yesterday's interview or missed part of today's interview, check us out at kbps.am. On the right side of the page, there is our Sports Ticker logo and a click here link where it will send you to the audio archive page so you can download yesterday's show and today's show if you didn't have a chance to listen to that interview with Ben Golliver. And actually, there's an MP3 version of every show that we've done this year, so you can stick that on your iPod. If you're going on a walk or a run and want to listen to a little bit of sports, plug us on there.
Yeah.
Find us, kbps.am. You can also listen live there on the left side of the page, a listen live link. And you can listen to KBPS programming 24/7, 365. So that is the place to do it. And tomorrow, Brian Wheeler on the show.
Oh, yes, we got him.
Yep, so Brian Wheeler will be on the show tomorrow as well as Monday. And we... tomorrow and Monday, and then next week our last week of the show. So, it's slowly winding to a close. But we'd like to thank you all once again for joining us this afternoon. Once again, Brian Wheeler on the show tomorrow. Also, more sports talk, number two and number one on the Blazers all-time top 10 list. And then also more mailbags. sportsticker1450@gmail.com is the place to send those. It's about time for us to sign out now. So for Sean Phillips and I am Sam Tung. Once again, thank you all so much for joining us this afternoon. We will see you all next week. tomorrow at 3 p.m. Same time, same place, here on Sports Ticker with Sam and Sean. This is the voice of the Portland Public Schools, AM 1450 KBPS in Portland.
You've been listening to Sports Ticker, a comprehensive look at the day in sports. The preceding program has been a sports presentation of AM 1450 KBPS.